Welcome to our Blue Papers podcast edition. Blue Papers are our version of white papers here at 4imprint. They cover a wide range of business topics, all with an aim to help your organization succeed. This is episode number 129, Knowledge Management. This episode is presented by 4imprint Incorporated Marketing Associate, Guinevere Thompson.
Knowledge management. Do you know what you know? And who knows it? Imagine one of your most valued employees leaves the organization. Maybe he's the one that fixed a key database for the past 10 years, or maybe it's the employee that's worked exclusively with a particular client for her entire career. When these key team members leave, they take valuable knowledge with them, the kind that you gain from experience and tenure. It's not something that's easily downloaded or transferred because it's in their heads. This is when you could use knowledge management. Knowledge management is about capturing and disseminating knowledge, explicit and tacit, in your organization. It's not just about data. It's about people and experiences and documenting how things really work. You might know the facts about something when it happens, but the critical knowledge isn't necessarily captured in data points and reports. Truthfully, there's no universal definition of knowledge management, or KM, probably because there's such intense debate on what constitutes knowledge in the first place. For this reason, it's best to think of KM in a broader context. Simply put, KM is the process by which organizations generate value from their intellectual and knowledge-based assets. Technology can be a facilitator of efforts, but KM is not about technology, databases, or applications. It's about codifying what employees, partners, and customers know and sharing it across the organization to create value. Let's look at the concept of knowledge management in something rather basic, like learning to drive a car. When you learned to drive a car, you probably took a course and referred to a manual. You discussed traffic regulations and learned how to read signs. This type of knowledge is explicit. It's captured, codified, and can be referenced in many places. It's the necessary knowledge that tells you, literally, the rules of the road and how a task should be completed. But you probably didn't learn to drive a car by sitting in a classroom or reading about it. You learned to drive by doing it. Remember when you had a permit and could only drive the car if an adult was riding in the passenger seat? That's when you really learned how to drive. That's when you learned about the sensitivity in braking and exactly how much you need to adjust the wheel to turn left. In truth, manuals were of little value. You learned how to drive a car through practice and experience. And if you had to teach someone how to drive a car, you'd probably toss aside the books and hop in the car with them, because it's easier to show someone how to do it. This is called tacit knowledge. It's the knowledge we learn through experience and insight. More specifically, tacit knowledge represents internalized knowledge that an individual may not be consciously aware of, such as how he or she accomplishes particular tasks. Some say that tacit knowledge can be more valuable than explicit knowledge because it is a better reflection of how things really work. In reality, tacit and explicit knowledge are equally important to an organization, and knowledge management is about extracting both types to produce value for the enterprise. So what's the value of knowledge, really? According to International Data Corp, or IDC, a market intelligence and advisory firm, Fortune 500 companies lose roughly $31.5 billion a year by failing to share knowledge. What does this mean in practical terms? Some experts point to the events of September 11, 2001, as the greatest knowledge management failure of the century. For example, we know that the Central Intelligence Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigations had information that might have thwarted the attacks, but the lack of communication between the two agencies prevented the information from being uncovered. If there had been a greater exchange of knowledge, who knows what might have happened? At the very least, experts agree that actively managing knowledge improves decision-making, increases efficiency, promotes innovation, and ultimately saves time and money. In short, you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time you start a project if you're using knowledge management to its fullest potential. And it's big business, too. A study conducted by GovWin a market research firm that analyzes government business, estimated that federal spending on knowledge management reached $1.3 billion per year from the period of 2006 to 2011. This estimate includes projects related to data warehousing, data mining, and analytics, but did not include knowledge categories like enterprise content management and customer relationship management. Likewise, a recent article in Forbes reported that the World Bank invests more than $600 million in knowledge services annually. This figure includes data collection, research, and technical assistance on a wide range of topics, such as education, health, infrastructure, communications, and government reforms. However, the total spending on knowledge services through partnerships, loans, and budgets is estimated to be a whopping $4 billion per year. Clearly, knowledge management as a business strategy continues to gain momentum, but what can that mean for your organization? How can you extract knowledge and translate it into a beneficial strategy? How can you identify what might be valuable if the knowledge only exists in employees' heads and experiences? This is the crux of knowledge management, and this podcast looks at knowledge management strategies and how companies are using them to create value in their organization. It's hard to say when knowledge management actually started, because in truth, companies have been managing internal knowledge forever. But the explosion of the internet and technology added a new level to the task of managing intellectual capital and internal knowledge. Accordingly, in 1989, a consortium of U.S. companies started the Initiative for Managing Knowledge Assets to address the technical component of managing knowledge. By the beginning of the 1990s, companies realized they had databases, repositories, and servers full of data, and they had no idea how to organize it. The idea of codifying information and making sense of it took on a new urgency. Around the same time, a number of journal articles and books appeared that really propelled the idea of knowledge management. Leading publications such as Fortune, the Harvard Business Review, and the MIT Sloan Management Review printed articles on organizational learning and the importance of knowledge capture and dissemination. During this time, there were two books that were published and helped launch KM efforts as well. The first book was written by Peter Senge, titled The Fifth Discipline, The Art and Practice of the Learning Organization. Even today, Senge is credited for much of the KM theories used across knowledge organizations. The second book that had a profound impact on KM and is still the most widely read work to date is The Knowledge Creating Company, How Japanese Companies Create the Dynamics of Innovation, by Jiro Nonaka and Hiro Takauchi. The book explained how Japanese companies become world leaders in the automotive and electronic industries by using organizational knowledge. The book introduced the concept of tacit versus explicit knowledge and noted that U.S. managers focus primarily on explicit knowledge. According to the authors, the key to success was transforming tacit knowledge into explicit knowledge, and that's something the Japanese had mastered. In the mid-1990s, KM as a business strategy flourished. Several well-known corporations implemented in-house KM programs and created positions to handle the influx of knowledge management efforts. In 1994, the International Knowledge Management Network went live and was soon followed by the U.S.-based Knowledge Management Forum. The market was flooded with KM conferences and seminars that focused on managing and leveraging explicit and tacit knowledge resources to achieve a competitive advantage. This is also the period when the Swedish firm Skandia hired the world's first chief knowledge officer. Knowledge management was a beneficial and thriving business strategy. Some might say it became the poster child for corporate success. In the last decade, KM efforts have expanded to include formal apprenticeships, discussion forums, corporate libraries, storytelling, communities of practice, and on-the-job discussions, to name a few. As technology expanded, so did the concept of KM. Knowledge bases, expert systems, knowledge repositories, group decision support systems, intranets, and collaborative software began to incorporate knowledge management strategies as a means to capture and disseminate critical organizational knowledge. Most recent literature focuses on the concept of KM as it relates to people, process, technology, and content. You need people to participate in your strategy, and you need organizational buy-in in order for KM to flourish. After all, capturing tacit knowledge relies on the active participation of employees and leaders. You also need a defined KM process. As Dr. Carla Ordell, president of the American Productivity and Quality Center, or APQC, and a well-known thought leader in KM, said, "Knowledge is sticky. Without a systemic process and enablers, it won't flow." In other words, knowledge management doesn't just happen because someone says it will. You need a process that provides the opportunity for knowledge to flow where it needs to be. Otherwise, it might remain stuck on a server that's never accessed. Technology can be an enabler of KM because it is used to capture and disseminate critical knowledge. It's not the driver of KM activity, but most experts agree that some sort of technology solution is critical to an effective KM strategy. Last, but far from least, you have to pay attention to content. Simply put, content is a key ingredient to successful KM. Unless you have valuable and rich content, how you collect and store knowledge is irrelevant. The content you capture must provide value to the enterprise, because if it doesn't, why would anyone support and use a knowledge infrastructure? When Bill Clinton ran for president, he said, "It's the economy, stupid." Similarly, when it comes to knowledge management, you might say, "It's the content, stupid." Knowledge is only valuable if it can be widely used to make business improvements or help a company realize cost savings. In theory, KM sounds like something every organization should embrace. In practice, it can be more difficult than you'd expect. The upcoming sections provide some tips on how to identify if you need a KM strategy and the steps you might take to get started. How do you know if your organization can benefit from implementing a knowledge management strategy? Generally, if you've heard employees say the following, then a KM initiative might be in order. Number 1. Why do we have to keep relearning this? Number 2. Haven't we done something like this before? I feel like I'm reinventing the wheel. Number 3. I don't know where to find it, but I know someone did it before. And number 4. We used to have someone who knew how to do that, but he took a new job. These could be warning signs that you're losing valuable knowledge or it's not being properly captured. It means that you aren't documenting how things really work or that critical knowledge exists only in the heads of certain employees. Also, if you're reinventing the wheel every time you're starting a project or releasing a product, you're losing time and money too. Companies that stand to lose a significant amount of employees due to retirement, downsizing, or a major acquisition are well positioned to implement a KM strategy. First, let's look at the knowledge gap that can occur due to the aging workforce. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, the workforce is aging, and over time, organizations will lose a significant number of employees due to retirement. In fact, by 2016, the number of workers between the ages of 65 and 74 and those aged 75 and up are predicted to soar by more than 80%. A lot of these employees may retire, and when they do, will they take corporate knowledge with them? The impact of the knowledge drain can be mitigated by a KM strategy. Knowledge retention strategies help plan for employee turnover by capturing critical knowledge before they leave. In today's business environment, employee downsizing is another area that often creates a knowledge gap. Research shows that downsizing initiatives often fail to retain critical skills, capabilities, experience, and knowledge. Downsizing can therefore lead to decreases in quality, productivity, and effectiveness. Research shows that it's cheaper and more effective to employ a knowledge retention strategy before there's a significant change in your employee base. By proactively building a knowledge management strategy before downsizing, you'll improve the ability to retain that knowledge and realize a cost savings by not having to recreate it. Mergers and acquisitions present another challenge. This is a time when your knowledge of customers, processes, and products needs to be up to date and accessible so it can be effectively merged and shared. With mergers, employees are more likely to resist knowledge transfer if they perceive their personal knowledge as a competitive advantage. For this reason, you should have a KM strategy in place before a major corporate disruption. Even if none of these factors apply to your organization, KM is still a viable business approach. It can lead to cost savings, reduced cycle time, performance improvements, increased collaboration, and innovation. It can also improve employee satisfaction and performance when they know where they can find critical knowledge to do their jobs. The list of possible benefits is endless, and the payoff can be huge. Just ask companies like Schlumberger that reported a savings of $200 million through its KM initiatives. The company also reported that KM helped improve service response time by 95% for resolving technical queries and by 75% for deploying engineering modifications globally. These reductions translated into improved operational performance and customer service. Starting a knowledge strategy can be a daunting task for companies that have a limited background or experience in the topic. There is an abundance of literature available on how to begin a KM strategy. In fact, it's overwhelming. There's not one widely accepted approach, but there is a general agreement on the tasks that should be addressed before you get started. These tasks don't necessarily need to be completed in order. However, the final step, developing a plan, can't be accomplished until the other steps are completed. Step 1. Identify senior leadership support and team leaders. Step 2. Establish knowledge management strategy and business case. Step 3. Conduct a knowledge assessment or audit. Step 4. Conduct a technology assessment. And step 5, develop a project plan and measurement approach. Here are the 5 KM strategy steps in more detail. Step 1, identify senior leadership support and key stakeholders. Almost all experts agree that the success of a knowledge management strategy hinges on the support, both financial and otherwise, of senior leaders and key stakeholders. In a report on successful KM implementation, leaders from the oil giant Halliburton said the following, quote, "It cannot be emphasized enough that people create the real power of knowledge management. At the core of any successful KM solution is a strong community, the foundation upon which the pillars of knowledge management are built." Unquote. Ideally, it's a best practice to find an executive sponsor and a knowledge champion to advocate the effort. In most cases, a knowledge champion works with the executive sponsor. You also need to identify a project leader or KM manager who will be responsible for developing the strategy and business case. In the perfect world, these individuals will have some KM training or experience, although it's not required. It's more important to find people that are passionate about the effort and have a good mix of business and technical knowledge. Step 2. Establish a knowledge management strategy and business case. A knowledge management strategy is simply a plan that describes how an organization will manage its knowledge for the benefit of that organization and its stakeholders. To do this, KM needs to be closely aligned with the overall organizational strategy and objectives. To create a KM strategy, you need to answer some basic questions. For example, what kind of knowledge do you want to capture, and for what purpose? Are you planning to use knowledge to improve a product or process? Or maybe you need a KM strategy to seamlessly transition knowledge to a new workforce. You can even use KM for innovation to help capture knowledge on product design and creation. But first, you need to have a clear idea of what you want to capture and how it will be used. To do this, you might consider asking a set of basic questions, such as, what kind of knowledge do we need? What do we plan to do with the knowledge? Are there any knowledge gaps in the organization? And what systems and tools are currently in place to capture knowledge? For example, is your goal to help people find existing information faster? Or are you seeking to create lessons learned and identify best practices for a particular business unit? Maybe you want to find experts or establish a community of practice around a given topic. You need to identify the expected outcomes you hope to achieve and be as specific as possible in what you want to capture. After developing a basic strategy, you should develop a business case. The business case should clearly articulate the business value that knowledge management will provide to the organization. It should outline the current state of knowledge sharing and provide detail on how the organizational culture, processes, and systems are currently acting as enablers or barriers. It should also describe the future vision of where you expect the organization to be and how success will be measured. It provides a basic roadmap on how you will use people, process, content, and technology to achieve your goals. On to step 3, conduct a knowledge audit or assessment. Once you've established strategy and business case, it's a good idea to conduct a knowledge management assessment, also known as a knowledge audit. This helps the organization gain a better understanding of its knowledge needs in relation to the current state of knowledge sharing and collaboration. Specifically, a knowledge audit identifies what, where, and how existing knowledge assets are used. It gives an organization a complete understanding of the current methods and processes across business units and service lines. It might ask questions like, what information and content currently exists? How is content stored, used, and coded? Who is responsible for content and its coordination? How is content validated? And how do we use content to produce organizational value? Audits and assessments can be collected by a variety of mediums, including questionnaires, surveys, interviews, or workshops. To be successful, it's important that audits are clear on the objectives and are introduced purposefully. It should focus on business needs, gaps, and challenges, and the knowledge that is required to fill those gaps. Step 4. Conduct a technology audit. While technology isn't a driver of KM strategy, it is an enabler and a critical piece. You need to understand what applications and functionality currently exist to support your business and whether or not the current technology infrastructure will work for your KM efforts. In this step, it's time to examine KM tools that are already in place. Any tool that is used for content management, collaboration, or business intelligence should be evaluated. This includes a full exploration of content management applications, such as authoring tools, expertise profiling, knowledge maps, metadata tagging, and personalization of content. Collaborative tools might include networking technologies, chat rooms, video conferencing, discussion forums, wikis, and groupware. Some examples of business intelligence tools include e-learning technologies, expert systems, decision support systems, and intelligent agents. The assessment determines any gaps in the existing technological capabilities and whether changes will be required to support a KM strategy. And lastly, step 5, develop a project plan and measurement strategy. Finally, you're ready to incorporate the results from the strategy, business case, and audits to create a detailed project plan for KM. This is where you define your specific objectives, determine deliverables, define roles and responsibilities, and define resource requirements. Like any good project management plan, you also need to draft a timeline and identify key milestones. Measures will help you know if you're making tangible gains. They don't have to be complicated to be effective. For example, you could capture the number of knowledge submissions or the number of workshop sharing sessions. You could also capture anecdotal success stories as a measure for success. Ideally, it's a good idea to link KM strategies to a direct financial goal. Although this can be difficult in the early phases, nonetheless, it is important to have a measure that ties to organizational value so that the benefit of KM is immediately understood by all employees in your organization. Without doubt, this simplified summary makes starting a KM strategy seem easy. This couldn't be farther from the truth, and for this reason, there's a lot of literature dedicated solely to the principles and methods organizations use to develop a KM strategy. If the task seems insurmountable, it might be helpful to contact a consulting firm that specializes in KM. There's no shortage of firms that can help. According to KM World, consulting firms can also help organizations break down barriers and provide a level of expertise not available in-house. A quick Google search will produce many organizations that offer services for knowledge audits, strategies, or implementation. Now we will discuss some of the common methods used in knowledge management. Knowledge management applies different methods to extract knowledge. Storytelling and communities of practice, or COPs, are two of the most common methods used by large organizations to exchange knowledge. Some companies also create collaborative workspaces specifically designed to promote knowledge sharing or create knowledge cafes to share information. Storytelling is a powerful way to share tacit and explicit knowledge. It's exactly as it sounds. You gather people together to share stories and experiences. The World Bank is one of the first companies that engaged in storytelling. Paul Corney, an expert in the field, advocates storytelling as a way to share experiences and knowledge that otherwise remains uncovered. In an online interview, he talks about a company that ran a storytelling competition, and it ultimately uncovered knowledge that might have been lost. He said, quote, "We learn best when we communicate with each other and exchange ideas. You have to have ways of provoking and promoting discussion." Unquote. Corney and others believe that the kind of data that can be gathered from storytelling is far more valuable than any statistical analysis. Communities of practice are groups of people that share an interest. It can evolve organically or be created for a specific purpose. The idea is to share information and experiences within the group so that ultimately the community learns from each other. COPs can exist online in the form of discussion boards and news groups, or be supported by real-life learning opportunities, like lunch-and-learn sessions. You might create a COP for a specific purpose, like best practices in client delivery or product introduction. It provides a place for experts in the field to share ideas, concerns, lessons learned, or troubleshoot specific issues. Some companies create physical workspaces that are designed to promote collaboration and knowledge sharing. The idea is to think out of the box when it comes to creating meeting space. Generally, meeting rooms feature a long conference table with multiple chairs and a whiteboard at the end. This traditional setting would not be considered a dynamic and creative model. Of course, the needs of your meeting space vary by culture and business goals. But if you want to promote creative thinking, several smaller tables would provide more interaction. Also, open spaces for ad hoc and informal interactions are preferred. Anything that contributes to a relaxed atmosphere, like coffee, snacks, magazines, or books, helps stimulate thinking and conversation. A good collaborative space has a lot of small but well-thought-out devices and tools throughout the room for employees to use. Think whiteboards, sticky notes, or flip charts to capture ideas and insights. A knowledge cafe is another popular KM method. A knowledge cafe brings a group of people together to have an open, creative conversation on a topic of mutual interest to share ideas, insights, and collective knowledge. The idea is not new, but its most recent advocate is David Gertien, a well-known thought leader in KM. His website at gertien.com gives free access to research and videos on a variety of KM topics. A knowledge cafe may sound informal, but it actually follows a formal process. It begins with participants seated in a circle of chairs and is led by a facilitator that begins by explaining the purpose of the cafe and the role of conversation in business life. The facilitator then introduces the topic and poses open-ended questions to the group. For example, if the topic is about knowledge sharing, the group might be asked to discuss some of the barriers to knowledge sharing. The participants break into smaller groups to discuss the topic in greater detail. After a set period of time, the group reconvenes and shares some of the insights that were captured in smaller groups. Periodic knowledge cafes provide the opportunity for people to better discuss and reflect critical topics, and often participants leave motivated and inspired. As mentioned, KM is not about technology. It's about people, process, and content. Still, technology is a critical enabler of KM. After all, you can't really get to where you need to be without a tool to get you there. Think of technology as the vehicle that can bring your vision to life, or at the very least, provides the ability to store knowledge for use and reuse. It can also be a focal point for discussions and communities of practice. There are a number of software tools that offer knowledge management systems to help you communicate and catalog information. In fact, the market is flooded with software vendors that can help organize everything from instant messaging to threaded forums, to comprehensive databases and wikis. Most of the applications can be used anywhere, anytime. There's a company called Business Software that helps organizations sort through the maze of applications associated with knowledge management and other strategies. In 2013, the company published a free report that summarized the top 5 KM technologies. It provides a comprehensive analysis and comparison of the tools and features that are used in leading applications. The applications that are highlighted in the report include Bloomfire, Igloo, Oxion, .NET Nuke, and Moxie Software. But explore these with an open mind. Ultimately, knowledge management is not about software, it's about people. The build it and they will come mentality doesn't necessarily apply. Technology should be selected only after you've crafted a strategy. By now, you might be sold on the concept of knowledge management and the benefits it can provide. However, there are some barriers to effective knowledge management. Most of these have to do with changing cultural norms and behaviors that can be ingrained in the corporation. You've probably heard the expression, "You can't teach an old dog new tricks," and the same idea applies to implementing KM. The difference is, you have to teach an old dog new tricks if you want to be successful in knowledge sharing, and that's often the most difficult part. What makes it so hard? Knowledge is power, after all. And too often, people see knowledge hoarding as a way to personal power. Employees may withhold valuable knowledge because they feel it provides job security or it makes them invaluable to a company. This is why it's important to demonstrate the value of knowledge sharing so it can be communicated to employees at every level of the organization. The "not invented here" mentality is also a barrier to knowledge sharing. It's part of human nature to resist things that are new or different to existing processes. Again, communicating the value and providing demonstrated success will help foster a culture that is conducive to knowledge sharing. Time, trust, and collaboration are also required for a successful KM implementation, but these can also be significant obstacles. You might hear employees say that they don't have time to participate in knowledge efforts, and that it isn't part of their daily job description. By ingraining knowledge activities into daily habits and processes, you can assuage this concern. Likewise, the idea of collaboration is often a challenge. It requires a shift in mindset, and organizations that have a silo mentality will find it more difficult to move to a collaborative environment. Finally, you have to build trust. If people don't know why you want to capture information and what you plan to do with it, they're unlikely to participate. You need to define the "what's in it for me" for each employee and communicate how knowledge sharing will ultimately make their jobs easier. Experts caution that it can take years to reap tangible benefits from KM, but when you do, it's worth it. Some benefits of knowledge management correlate directly to bottom line savings, while others are more difficult to quantify. Still, there's proof in the numbers, and when done correctly, KM provides value. The Venezuelan oil company, PDVSA, for example, reported saving $180 million in areas such as planning, technology, operations, and business processes when it first launched a KM strategy in 2000. In addition, the firm Computer Sciences Corporation, or CSC, reported that it saved a company $200 million after an investment of only $12 million. Specifically, the CSC initiated a process and supported technology for logging and cataloging inquiries after they were answered by experts. Likewise, Halliburton reported that knowledge management contributed to a $71.5 million savings that was largely due to a community of practice dedicated to sharing knowledge and expertise. Halliburton is considered a best practice organization in knowledge management and also reports that time savings, sharing of lessons learned, and just-in-time training are some of the additional benefits KM provides. Overall, the organization reports that KM increased operational efficiency and improved service quality. Naturally, every company wants to save money with business improvements, but it should be emphasized that a number of the benefits from KM are intangible. That is, you can't always associate a bottom-line benefit to doing it, but you inherently know it saves you money. According to research, on average, a single employee spends a shocking 76 hours per year looking for things in the workplace, including files and emails. This calculates to roughly $177 billion across U.S. businesses. Imagine the cost savings you might achieve if you simply made it easier for employees to find what they need. In closing, ask how much time your company wastes reinventing the wheel for a project or duplicating efforts. How much savings would you associate with that? Questions like these make it difficult to measure the value of KM, because while you know it's improving the way you work, it may not necessarily have a direct financial link to your bottom line. But these are the types of organizational improvements that can save time, money, and your sanity. So, why not stop reinventing the wheel and get behind it and see if KM can drive your organization to a new level?
Thanks for listening to this podcast on knowledge management. Keep on the lookout for our next podcast, Predictive Analytics, the Corporate Crystal Ball. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to listen to others, please visit our website at 4imprint.com/bluepapers.